WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Paul Thomas Anderson, wrote and directed the new film Magnolia. He also wrote and directed Boogie Nights and Hard Eight. The Toronto Film Critics Association voted Magnolia Best Film of the Year and gave Anderson the award for Best Director. Film critic Joe Morgenstern of The Wall Street Journal also described Magnolia as the best film of the year. He wrote, "At a time when cynicism passes for wisdom, Anderson has made a wildly funny, truly wise, and subversively sincere film about pain, forgiveness, and the possibility of healing." I'll add that Magnolia has a terrific cast. Jason Robards plays a dying man. Philip Seymour Hoffman is his nurse. Julianne Moore is the dying man's wife. Tom Cruise plays his estranged son. Philip Baker Hall plays a quiz show host. William H. Macy is a former quiz kid. John C. Reilly is an LAPD officer called in to check on a reported disturbance at the home of a young woman played by Melora Walters. The officer does something very out of character. He asks her for a date, not realizing that she's a heavy cocaine user. Here they are on that date in a restaurant.
I haven't been on a date since I was married, and that's 3 years ago. And Claudia, whatever you want to tell me, whatever you think might scare me, won't. And I will listen to you. I'll be a good listener to you if that's what you want. You know, and I won't judge you. And I know I can do that sometimes, and I won't. And I can listen. And you shouldn't be scared of scaring me off or whatever you think that I think, and on, you should just say it, whatever it is, and I'll listen to you.
You don't know how stupid I am.
It's okay.
You don't know how crazy I am.
It's okay.
I've got troubles, okay?
I'll take everything at face value. I'll be a good listener to you.
I started this, didn't I?
Whatever it is, just say it. You'll see.
You want to kiss me, Jim?
Yes, I do.
Paul Thomas Anderson, welcome to Fresh Air.
Hi.
What's your way of describing what this film is about?
Well, there's the sort of generic, or as generic as I could make it, line that we kind of came up with, the sort of nine intersecting lives on a day in the valley line. And those are the sort of things you have to come up with because the studio basically says, come on, we got to put this into one sentence. What is this movie about? And I think we were all really bad about it, so we just tried to make it as general as possible. So there's the nine intersecting lives on one day in the San Fernando Valley, ? That's my sort of fake summation of it, but a larger one is it's about family relationships and all kinds of it's about the sort of struggle to mend them or to break them, depending on which needs to happen.
One of the things that holds the nine stories in this film together is the way you use music. After the prologue in the movie, there's an opening scene that I've come to think of as the overture.
Mm-hmm.
There's a song by Amy Mann playing on the soundtrack, and as that plays, we're introduced to each of the key characters in the movie. And it's like an overture. Instead of getting all the musical themes that you're going to hear in the movie, you get all of the like themes of the characters that we're going to meet.
Yeah. That's really well said, and kind of exactly what the plan was to just, you know, I thought it would be a cool idea to just bombard with information, you know, for about 20 minutes, and then if you catch what you catch from those 20 minutes, but then a sort of promise that we would go back and pick up the pieces, you know, and I thought that was a cool way to sort of tackle telling the story.
And more about the way you use music. Toward the end of the movie, there's a song by Amy Mann on the soundtrack. And as that song, which is called Wise Up, plays, there's a sequence in which each of the characters, the camera just moves from one character to another.
Mm-hmm.
And each of the characters sings a few bars along with the record. And I thought that was really just an incredibly interesting way of using the music. And a really effective emotional moment in the movie. And it reminded me of opera in a way, where all feelings are sung, even by the character who's dying.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's, yeah, there you go. You hit that. Thank you. And, you know, the music in this movie, it so hand in hand with the creation of it. You know, they're linked. It's not an afterthought. Basically, when I started to write the movie, I had just a million ideas buzzing around in my head, and I had Amy Mann, who was a close friend of mine, writing all these wonderful songs, whether they're sort of demos or B-sides lying around and stuff. And it was a weird thing because I could look at her songs and they were really articulating things that I had buzzing around in my head. And so I latched onto her music as a sort of concrete thing that existed for what I was thinking I was trying to say. And so it just became this hand-in-hand partnership in writing the script and listening to the music and both of the things bouncing off each other. And Amy eventually wrote two or three new songs based on reading my script. So, thank you for liking that scene.
Oh, a lot. Yeah. Now, the line that I consider to be like one of the themes of the movie is said by the earnest cop played by John C. Reilly. And he's talking about how hard it is to do the right thing, and he says sometimes people need to be forgiven. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people need a little help. Sometimes they need to go to jail, and that's a very tricky thing on my part, making that call. How did that become a theme of the movie for you, deciding who really needs to be punished and who needs to be forgiven?
It really was something, I guess, going on in my life or around me, or I think everybody's life. You just sort of, I've sort of always tried to make a big deal out of decisions, you know, decisions that I make, or looking at mistakes that you just have to decipher what is forgivable and what is unforgivable, you know. And as far as the characters go in the movie, you're just sort of seeing everybody at critical mass, you know, and sort of at a decision-making point. And it's kind of interesting. It was kind of an interesting thing to create those situations and decipher what, from the author's point of view, my point of view, is forgivable and what is unforgivable. I think there are certain, you know, it's funny because I think it was kind of a reactionary thing for me based on Boogie Nights. I really liked the compliment that I got from that movie, which was that I didn't judge the characters. But I also felt like I wanted to make sure that what I thought morally was very clear in my next movie. So I hope that I've done that, is to make very clear moral decisions or very clear. Sort of, the author has really sort of made his mark about what he thinks is moral.
This may be perhaps too personal, so you could just let me know about that. But were you going through something in your life where you had to, were you consciously tried to figure out whether somebody close to you should be forgiven or punished?
No, sure, but I think it's the kind of stuff you go through every day. You see, have people around you making decisions, or actually even mistakes of my own that I've made, you know, where I just, you know, what happens is, I think if you sort of lead any kind of life that's sort of self-aware, you're wondering, you know, I keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. And you start to decipher why you're making them. And it's just not good enough to decipher why you're making them. What's important is to make sure that you are not doing them again. And I was kind of going through a phase like that where I found myself making the same mistakes over and over and over again. And I was scared that I was going to get to a point in my life where, you know, it wasn't good enough to have a wonderful excuse about, you know, maybe something happened to you once upon a time that has created this situation. It just wasn't good enough to have that excuse at this point. It was very important to be a man and not make the same mistakes again and again.
What kind of mistake did you think you kept making over and over?
None of your business.
Right, that's fine. Probably not.
No, I mean, probably less severe mistake than you might think. Just sort of simple, everyday.
Yeah.
Why am I doing that? Why am I getting upset at these things that I shouldn't get upset at? Why am I hurting the people around me that I love, you know? Just simple, everyday mistakes.
Paul Thomas Anderson is my guest, and he wrote and directed the new film Magnolia, as well as Boogie Nights and Hard Eight. One of the characters in Magnolia, the character of Frank T.J. Mackey, played by Tom Cruise, does these incredible self-help seminars called Seduce and Destroy. Yeah. These are seminars for guys who are real losers and like need help in scoring. And he teaches things like how to fake like you are nice and caring, and teaches men that having a couple of chicks for friends can be useful in setting jealousy traps. Forgive me for killing these lines.
No, don't worry.
Who inspired this character?
A friend of mine, a guy named Brian Kehew, is just the kind of guy everyone should have as a friend. He'll always show up at your doorstep with just fascinating videotapes or audio tapes. And one day, it was about 3 or 4 years ago now, he showed up with this audio tape that he had. He was teaching a class in recording engineering, and there was two guys in the studio part, and there was an open mic out there, and it was lunchtime. They were going to lunch, and he just kind of hit play and record because he saw these two guys talking. So he sort of surreptitiously recorded them talking. Anyway, like a year later, he found this DAT, you know, that he recorded, and he played it for me, and we listened to these two guys talking, and it was basically one guy sort of lecturing this other guy on how to control women, how to pick up women, how to sort of master them in the relationship, how to basically just keep them down, keep them in there, and all these sort of catchphrases that are in the movie are stuff that these two knuckleheads were talking about in this audio tape. And I just sort of stolen it and sort of switched it around and mocked it up. And on top of that, there's actually there's guys that do these kinds of seminars, you know, back to the days when Eric Weber in his book in the 70s, you know, How to Pick Up Women, which was pretty tame compared to some of the stuff that's out there now, and guys like Ross Jeffries and R. Don Steele, really sort of creepy situation, but they do exist. So on top of that, you know, I just factored in sort of many guys that I went to high school with who always had theories on you know,
how to score.
Yeah.
No, I've read that Tom Cruise, who plays the role of this self-help guru, actually asked to be in your next movie after seeing Boogie Nights. Did you know for sure that you wanted to use him, or did you think, star? Yeah.
Oh, no. It actually wasn't as direct as Tom saying to me, I want to be in your next movie. I think it was just a sort of call. Like, I loved Boogie Nights, and I was in London, and I met him there, and while he was shooting Eyes Wide Shut, and I was a massive fan of his from all of his movies. I really loved him. I thought he was a wonderful actor, and I just started to write Frank T.J. Mackey is a character. I just started to think about making that a character in a movie, and at the time that I met him, and I just said, okay, so I'm about to start writing something. Why don't I just call you in 8 or 9 months and see if you want to be involved? And that was actually perfect timing because he was finishing Eyes Wide Shut 8 or 9 months later, and I finished writing and handed him the script, and I don't know. I tried to make it the unturned downable part, you know.
Did it change the set at all to have the kind of movie star that everybody wants the latest gossip about? You know, was there like the personality press on the set?
Not really. You know what? Maybe just once, kind of early on, we learned our lesson. You know, we just sort of had. You have signs when you're shooting, pointing the crew as they exit the freeway. There'll be a sign that says, you know, the set is this way and the name of the movie. Just put those mile markers up all over town. Well, we did that the first day, and it just meant that people could find us. You know, people could find the set, and they could find where Tom was. So we just very quickly learned lessons of subterfuge and confusing people and dodging it, and then they're not around anymore. It becomes pretty easy. But so that was the first time I had to deal with anything like that. But he was great about it too. He sort of clued us into how it usually goes for him. It's a different situation, but then once that stuff was sort of done away with, it was so easy. He's just a director's dream to work with.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Paul Thomas Anderson, and he wrote and directed the new film Magnolia. He also wrote and directed Boogie Nights and Hard Eight. Why don't we take a short break here, and then we'll talk some more.
Okie doke.
This is Fresh Air. Back with Paul Thomas Anderson, he wrote and directed the new film Magnolia. He also wrote and directed Boogie Nights and Hard Eight. I want to play a clip from the film, and this is a scene where Philip Seymour Hoffman plays a nurse who's taking care of an older dying man played by Jason Robards, and he finds out that the estranged son of this man is really this self-help guru who teaches men how to manipulate women. And so he's trying to track down this estranged son, and he finds out how to reach one of his people. So here is the nurse, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, on the phone with one of T.J. Mackey's people, trying to convince this person to tell Mackey to come see his father before he dies.
Well, there's no number for Frank in any of her old stuff, you know, and he's pretty out of it. I mean, like I said, he's dying of cancer. So,
what kind of cancer?
Oh, it's brain and lung.
My mother had breast cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is she all right? Is she?
Oh, she's fine now.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it was scary, though.
Oh, it's a hell of a disease.
Oh, it sure is.
Yeah.
So, wait, I'm sorry, so why call me?
I know this sounds silly, and I know that I might sound ridiculous, like this is the scene of the movie where the guy's trying to get a hold of the long-lost son, you know, but this is that scene. This is that scene, and I think they have those scenes in movies because they're true, you know, because they really happen, and you gotta believe me, this is really happening. I mean, I can give you my number, and you can go check with whoever you gotta check with and call me back, but do not leave me hanging on this, all right? Please. I'm just... Please. See, this is the scene of the movie where you helped me out.
Paul Thomas Anderson, when you wrote these lines, were you really aware of the fact that this is the kind of thing that happens in a movie and somehow you couldn't let it happen without commenting that you knew this happens in a movie, but it also happens in real life?
Yeah, totally. You know, I think I wrote what I would have tried to say, you know, in that desperate situation. Phil's character is so desperate to do the right thing and get in touch with Tom's character that he'll sort of just spell out the truth. And the truth is I was coming from a lot of situations in my life that you just would stop and look around and say, you know, this is a movie scene. This is a movie scene. This isn't really happening to me, right? This is something that I saw in a movie. This is it becomes a very scary thing. If you've grown up on movies like I have, you know, you sort of depend upon the movies to tell you the truth about things. And then when the movies betray you, when you're in a real life situation where it's very desperate and someone's dying or you need to get in touch with someone very desperately, and the movies have not taught you the real truth, you kind of start to get mad at them, you know, and you start to sort of reference them, and at least I do, and I'm such a product of the movies. But I wanted to get to that, hopefully show these scenes in the movie In Magnolia that are kind of traditional movie scenes. You know, there's nothing sort of new about help me find my long-lost son as I'm lying on my deathbed. And that's a really sort of good old-fashioned dramatic situation. But they're true. You know, I've been there. I've seen that situation happen. And all you can sort of say to make it somehow more realistic is to reference the movies.
Did you ever write that scene without writing the lines, comparing it to the emotional scene in the movie?
No. No, I just wrote it that way and stuck with it. And only one time did somebody say, I can't remember who, said, do you really want to do that? Don't you think you might take them out of the movie? I said, no, this is probably the most honest line in the entire movie.
Because this movie is so much about the nine characters at the center of it, there's a lot of close-ups of faces. You know, as the director of the film, what are some of the considerations about how to shoot a close-up of a face? You know, what angle, how long to keep it on there so it remains interesting and doesn't overstay its welcome? Could you talk about facial close-ups a little bit?
I'm a really, really big fan of close-ups. I think that's because I'm such a big fan of my actors, you know, and you gotta sure have somebody that can hold a close-up.
Yeah.
And I feel like I do, you know, all of them really. You know, it's a thing that it's really just about picking the right lens. It's a very technical thing, you know, it's about picking the right lens to make a close-up with.
Why is it the right lens?
Well, there's a thing that can happen if the lens is too wide and it's up in somebody's face, they can look kind of silly. They can look kind of goofy, you know, sort of distort the proportions of their face. But if you use a much longer lens, it's a much prettier, much more attractive close-up, but it also feels very distant. It's not a true close-up because you feel very far away. You don't feel like you're right there in the room. So it's sort of about picking the right lens. It's sort of a middle ground between those two where you can feel present and right there in their face, but also make it look attractive. You know, not to cheat, you know, not to cheat and gloss it up, but you can distract an audience if somebody's nose is sort of sticking right out at them, you know.
Or their nose hair is growing out of their nose. You don't want to be seeing that.
Right. But I'm such a big fan of it, and it's of close-ups, and really it has to do with actors being able to hold it more than anything else. And also, it's a tricky thing too when you do close-ups. It does mean that the camera, if you pick the right lens, like the lens that I like to use, it means that the camera does have to be physically close to them, and that creates a situation of eye lines where sometimes an actor won't be able to see the other actor they're acting with, and that can sometimes be the greatest thing in the world for an actor, and sometimes it can be a detriment to their performance and their communication to the other actor. You kind of have to decipher when to do that.
Paul Thomas Anderson wrote and directed the new film Magnolia. He'll be back in the second half of the show. We'll close this half hour with one of the Amy Mann songs used in the film. This is called Wise Up, and it's the song that the characters sing along with. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
It's not what you thought when you first began it. You got what you want. Now you can hardly stand.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with screenwriter and director Paul Thomas Anderson. He made the films Heart Eight, Boogie Nights, and Magnolia, which is currently in theaters. Let's pick up where we left off, talking about writing and directing Magnolia.
I'll say here, if you haven't seen the movie yet and you're about to see it, you might want to just put your hands over your ears for the next question. So here's a moment for you to do that. Or you know, leave the room and come back in about 90 seconds. Okay. Paul Thomas Anderson, there's a scene in Magnolia. You know, throughout the movie, which is set in Los Angeles, it's raining really hard, adding to this atmosphere of gloom. And near the end, it begins to rain frogs.
It's been said.
A lot of people who have seen the movie have speculated. I think it's fair to say everybody who's seen the movie has probably speculated, what was he intending to say with that?
I think the best thing to do is keep them speculating. My theory is that you'd hate me in the morning, you know. you'd just be like, God, if he'd only shut his mouth about it, I'd still probably be enjoying that sequence. But I think that the one thing that I would want to say is that it is something that really happens. And there's a very funny story about 2 years ago when I was sitting down to write the movie. I got together with Philip Baker Hall, and who's on all my movies, and will continue to be, I hope. He said, so what's the next one about? You know, and I said, oh, it's got this and this, and you're gonna play this game show host. And I just sort of mentioned a few things to him, and then I was kind of nervous because I was sort of getting to the whole Rain of Frogs idea, and I very seriously explained to him that there's this thing is called a Rain of Frogs, and it really does happen. It does, in fact, happen. I'd first read about it in Charles Fort's books. I started sort of babbling on about the Rain of Frogs, and this really does happen. And what will happen is that water spouts might pick them up, or for as many times as that can be explained, they'll just, you know, frogs that are indigenous in Florida will fall in California, and how can you explain that? And I was just going on and on and on and on about the Rain of Frogs, and he was just staring at me. And then I finished, and he said, interesting story. I was actually in a Rain of Frogs once. It was 1950 something in the Swiss Alps. He was in Europe right after the war, and he was on a mountain pass. I believe it was in Switzerland, and it started to rain frogs. And he said that the scariest part was not that it was raining frogs, but rather that he was on this mountain pass and his car could get no traction. And so he pulled over to the side of the road, and he waited 10 or 15 minutes for it to pass. And he drove along. And I thought right then and there that if I don't go through with this sequence, I'm just a big pussy.
Now, you explained to me there's really been rains of frogs?
Yeah. It's not just something that's in the Bible or something that I made up. It's really something that has happened.
And is there any explanation for it? Or are you pulling my leg?
No. There are explanations, but I think everybody has their own explanation.
Uh-huh. Well, let me... This is one of the movies, one of the few movies probably, that sent me back to the Bible.
Good.
To Exodus. And let's see, the Lord is telling Moses to go to the Pharaoh and tell him, and if thou refuse to let them go, behold, I will smite all thy borders with frogs.
Hmm. Who wrote that?
Yeah.
Who wrote the Bible? Who wrote that line?
No, I asked Charlton Heston. did you go back to the Bible? Did you go back to Exodus? You must have, because there's a little reference on the screen to it.
Yeah, you can find, if you want to watch closer, sort of Exodus 8, and the numbers 8 and 2 are sort of planted throughout the movie. The fact of the matter is that I should sort of own up to the fact that I didn't, when I was writing the sequence initially, I really wasn't completely clear-headed that it was in the Bible, you know. And Henry Gibson reminded me and put it in front of me. And I said, oh, you know, okay, great. It's in the Bible. So how does that factor in? I was coming from a sort of a different place, and then it became an afterthought, sort of what it meant in the Bible. I was coming from a different place.
Okay. Have you overheard any conversations of people walking out of theaters talking about the frogs and hearing their interpretations of what it means?
The one thing that I did hear, I was in a screening in Los Angeles. I snuck in the back for the frog sequence, and when the frogs start hitting it, because it's very, very loud for a while, you know, and there's just constant barrage of frogs, and then right in the middle of it, it cuts to a very silent moment, you know. And in that silent moment, this one guy had turned to his friend sitting next to him, and in the barrage of noise, he'd leaned to his friend and he said, and he opened his mouth and the screen goes completely silent, and you could hear him as clear as a bell say, "This is really stupid." And everyone kind of looked over at him and just, you know, he was kind of completely caught in that silent moment saying, "This is really stupid." And that was really fun for me to hear him say that loud and that clear.
Did anyone try to talk you out of this scene and say, you know, look, in a realistic movie, this scene just isn't going to make sense?
No. I think once you sort of read it, what can you say? You know, I somehow don't see that anybody could come and say, "Can we talk about cutting the frog sequence?" I think it's just so insane to begin with that you just either go with it or you don't. And I think that was what was great about the studio, was that they didn't even think about it. They were wonderful. It was just sort of like, it's going to rain frogs in this movie. Wonderful. You either completely give it up to that fact or you don't make the movie.
Well, when I saw that scene, I have to say, what went through my mind is, yes, sometimes I feel like there is about to be a rain
great.
Of frogs.
Great. Well, that's really good to hear, because that means a lot to me. And that helps make up for that guy saying it was stupid. That's nice what you just said.
My guest is Paul Thomas Anderson. He wrote and directed the new movie Magnolia. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air.